Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 172! 72! Be more excited.
Okay, sorry.
172 episodes.
Yes.
Yes, lovely. How are you, Nick?
I'm well.
You're well?
It's been a mad week.
It's been a mad week.
It's been a crazy 2 weeks.
It has, yes. Mm. It's been a lot.
It's been a lot. What's going on?
It is. Happy times, happy face, happy families, happy families.
Jolly happy, not jolly.
But you're well.
Yes.
Good.
Are you?
I'm fine, and I will briefly say, at the time of this recording, there was a delay in this episode coming out due to, very sadly, the passing of my wonderful, wonderful cat Django, and if everyone can take a drink to him, he's worth it. Very briefly, want to say a huge, huge thank you to everyone who sent messages of support and love. It meant so much to me and Ben to know how many people understood what it's like when you really, really love your pets. So thank you so much to everyone. And
but there we go.
Another time we should talk about that more. Try I don't know late. Why.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fun episode to come.
Oh, I don't know. I love talking about grief. I'm Irish Catholic. Oh, I could do hours of this. Right, hours.
It's going to be a Sinead solo episode, I feel.
Yeah, basically me, cigarette, thing of whiskey. So, guys, I don't know why I'm talking like that.
You're all in for a treat.
Yeah. How are you, though, Nick?
I'm all right.
But you're fine, you're fine. How is Baldur's Gate?
Oh, it's very exciting.
Yes.
It's still very exciting. I haven't played it for a few days, actually.
No.
Yeah. Might need to wrap this up so I can get on with it.
As we established on Patreon, has the fact that you can choose your own genitals come up yet in the game?
I feel it could have done on a couple of occasions.
You feel it.
But I bypassed those particular conversations.
Did you actually? What, really?
Yeah. Well, so, no, that's weird.
In the game,
yeah.
This is Baldur's Gate 3, isn't it?
Yeah.
Three. I don't know what happens in one and two. Jesus. So what, you actually had scenarios where someone was
there were leading conversations being had.
To sexy time or show me your genitals?
To sexy computer times. And I thought that's
why didn't you go for
weird.
That? What? Why didn't you go
I
for
don't
it?
I don't know. I thought, no, it's not the time. We're about to kill some goblins. It's no time for sexy time.
But surely that's an aphrodisiac.
Maybe after killing goblins.
Oh, you're after. The heat of the promise of the fight isn't enough for you.
No, absolutely.
You're all business.
No, yeah. Get the killing over and done with. And then sexy times.
Then sexy computer times.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we look forward to hearing about how those went. Yeah, I do feel like in future games you'll be like, well, you're getting a divorce for some reason. Wasn't even built into the game of all possibilities, but it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not going well. Mm. Custody battle was a nightmare.
Of the tiny spider baby.
Exactly.
Well, any poisonings this week?
No.
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 No poisonings?
No, I think so.
No. Still my throat.
Yeah.
Still my chest. I should see a doctor. This has been going
possibly.
On for a while.
Possibly.
I'm just like, nah, it's probably basically
probably,
fine.
Probably fine. You can kill it with whiskey.
Yeah, I should kill it with whiskey, actually. No, there's no poisonings, apart from the humidity.
Yes, I am thinking. It's very sweaty.
You are dressed for fall, Nick. I know this is now September. Hurrah, hurrah for fall.
I'm wearing a watch I wear 12 months a year.
This is true. You don't change
the
it up.
Same. I do not have a summer and spring and fall outfit.
You do. You
occasionally
wear...
I might wear a short sleeve shirt.
Exactly. You favour a short sleeve black shirt. That's what you do. But you are fully dressed for lumberjack season.
I'm fully dressed. Yes, I am fully dressed. Unsurprisingly.
No, for the season, not the... I mean, no, let's not go down that route. You know, you can just wear a t-shirt if you want to. You don't have to wear a full shirt over the top of it.
I'm quite happy as I am, thank you.
All right, you do you.
Exactly.
Okay.
You do you with your baggy pants.
I'm not wearing them now. Right, this is for Patreon. I bought some swimming shorts.
Yes.
Because I'm going on holiday.
Today bought big vagina pants.
Oh, I knew I shouldn't have told you this.
Should have done, no.
That I tried them on. They're fine everywhere apart from around the vagina, apparently, where it's just very much very baggy yet points to the area a lot. So they're being sent back. Mm. Not the look I was going
Wise,
for.
Wise, I feel.
Yes, indeed. Well, speaking of what you do with your day based on your genitals and humidity, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where to go with that one, but okay. So yes, thank you very much. A lot of darling people out there. To Alana.
To Darnell Cullen and their beautiful daughter as well. Darnell, Lydia, and your daughter.
To Shannon.
To Tiffany Burgess.
The Belladonna Badass.
Oh, nice. Like nice. To Erica Platt.
And to Mo Keller. Thank you, darlings.
Thank you, delicious, lovely Patreon subscribers. We had a lot of fun on Patreon because we talked about the Tottenham outrage.
Oh, we did!
Yes, which was had moments of tragedy, but was mental as
also
well.
Also moments of hilarity as well.
That was a crazy one with lots of policemen running around and people shooting each other and people trying to jump on trams and commandeer them.
What's
and
to love?
Throwing potatoes.
Who doesn't enjoy that?
I'd love it when a potato is thrown at me.
That's because you're Irish.
It's both an insult and a gift. It's like, oh, come on. Well, actually, yeah, we like these. There's no meal that can't be improved by potatoes. Service update for everyone. So this episode is preceding a short break that we're due to have, mainly because I'm on holiday and Nick's having a lie down. In the break, we're going to be releasing one of our much requested Patreon episodes, which we think you'll enjoy. And also over on Patreon, we have a story from the delicious Tim Cloak, always very popular. We're also doing a Q&A episode for our Patreon subscribers. People can send us any questions they'd like us to answer, whether it's about the show, about ourselves, or just dilemmas they'd like us to tackle.
We're good at tackling all manner of dilemmas.
Oh, yes. All weird sort of scenarios. Wow. We would happily welcome those.
It's been a while since we did a Q&A. And yes. There have been lots of new patrons out there.
Absolutely.
So yes, ask away.
Yeah, always very good fun. But yes, we will be back with the main format of the episodes in 2 weeks' time. But there will be content released in the interim. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Probably.
To drink coke doesn't talk about poison?
Probably.
No, we drink poison and talk about coke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let's go with the first one,
yeah,
shall we?
That was really annoying.
No, I can keep it up.
I wouldn't.
Fucking hell.
That sounded slightly more threatening than I intended it to.
What did you think was going to happen with that? What did you think was the outcome from you going, I wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
So can I ask what you thought you were going to do with...
I in my head, I thought, because like, there's going to be a mad exodus of listeners, because it's really annoying.
I took it as you were going to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Then I thought, oh no, that sounds a lot more threatening.
And I think all the listeners were with me, except one who was like, yes, I'll walk out.
Exactly. I don't want to hear that nonsense again. I'm off.
Hey, you know what?
Waffle.
Delivered by fools. That's what people are here for. But we should go with the first one.
Yeah, whatever it was, I've lost track.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick, and the secret ingredient is...
is blackberries.
Blackberries. Which is crazy, because why have we not had blackberries?
I know, I was quite surprised. Did I have to check the list twice? To make sure. Much like Santa. Just to make sure. But no, we have not had blackberries before. No. Or other manner of berry.
But then we have famously had a cocktail that involved blackberries.
We've got a few that involve blackberries.
Involved blackberries. And it was around the same time of year. And we went to foraging.
We did.
This time you just sent me out.
I did. I said, go and find a hedge.
And you knew I would.
You would, absolutely, yeah.
I'm out the door with a bag and a big Tupperware box, foraging away. And I delivered. I have some fresh blackberries for you. Don't know if they're actually figure in this cocktail, but...
No, they're just things to throw at you.
Oh, good. Oh, nice. The week's not been hard enough, Nick, but lovely.
Some light entertainment for me.
Marvellous. Okay, with blackberries as the ingredient, hopefully not the inspiration, what have you come up with?
Well, we are having... And for some reason, the name of this cocktail actually makes me irrationally mad.
Okay.
We're having an especial day.
A special day?
A special day.
A special day. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it annoys me.
Ooh.
I hate that.
Especial
is a English word.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It's a legitimate word.
How? Why and how?
But I just find it infuriating.
What is it? What's different between that and special?
Not a great deal. It is...
E-special.
It's especially special.
Online special.
No, I don't think quite what they had
by email special.
But yeah, it is a legitimate word for, yeah, extra special.
Goodness me, I had no idea that was a legitimate word, I hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Unnecessary rage is directed at this name.
but
so much so that I very nearly didn't do the cocktail because I thought,
because this is annoying. What would you call it?
I would just call it a special day.
A special day?
Special day. Why? Well, it's special.
Especially.
That's just sounding twatty.
Well, either an especially lovely day.
Yeah.
Or a special day.
Yeah.
That's just sort of halfway through two sentences, and then someone got bored.
It's just annoying. But that's what it is.
Lovely. Okay. Well, we're not sure how to feel about the name, but, you know, we high hopes for the drink. Let's get drunk. I think it is high time for us to slip into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a minute.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick.
Yes.
And a special day. A special day.
It's a special.
And it looks very pretty.
Yeah.
Yes. It looks blackberry.
It's blackberry-ish.
Blackberry-ish, as it should. If it didn't look this colour, I would be worried. Yes, but it looks like a blackberry colour.
Nice.
And you put it in a nice martini glass.
I know. I saw this in your cupboard. I thought, why not? Let's put it on.
Okay. You had no plan otherwise.
I was going to go in my traditional Nick and Nora, but I thought... I saw some martini glass in the cupboard.
Very nice.
Why not? Mix it up a bit.
Mix it up.
Haven't used one for a while.
Lovely. You are still being pestered for glassware videos.
Okay.
By people who want to see your glassware in the new flat.
I have seen.
What have you seen?
If you look on Diffords, they've just partnered with a new glassware supplier. I think they're Dutch. And
oh, that good.
There's some exciting glasses there.
Like, how exciting?
Like really smart.
Like, really pretty.
Really, really, really nice.
Oh, God. It's like art, with most of us will look at it and go, they just look like glasses. But Nick and the aficionados will be like, oh, my God, those are so
I'll show
peak.
You later, because they're like, oh.
Oh, there's no words.
Some of them are getting
Can you summon up a word? No, a noise. Well, back to my shitty glasses. Well, right now we have a very full, delicious glass of purpley goodness.
Purpley goodness.
So, smells good. Smells sweet. That's cool. Interesting. Okay, well, I think we should dive in. Lovely. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Okay, let's go. Oh, okay. Not expecting that. Oh, core memory. Oh, God. No, this tastes like sweets I used to have in France in the 90s. But like blackberry or kind of sort of synthetic kind of. It's not too sweet, but it's got a really powerful fruit flavor. I'm sorry, this sounds really weird to anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, which is everyone. That blackberry flavor is really reminiscent from all of France. I don't know why. I don't know any other way to explain it. It's like these sweets we used to get, but they're not overly sweet and sugary. Wow. Okay.
Well, there we go.
It's so
bringing
so
back
familiar.
Scary memories.
I don't know if it's a good drink. I'm just overwhelmed by that. So really nice fruity flavor. It does fade away to nothing. I'm going to say that.
But then you have another sip.
But then I haven't. What?
Then you have more.
It's not like spirit forward.
No, not at all.
But fruity and interesting.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, I'm intrigued.
I think it's perfectly delightful. Perfectly, perfectly pleasant. I will.
It's really a lot of flavour at the beginning, a lot of perfume. Gentle sweetness from the fresh blackberries, I bloody well hope. But it does taste strong. I can taste the alcohol.
Yeah, there's definitely booze in that.
What else is in this? I don't know. So blackberries.
Give me a guess. Yeah, so those are some blackberries.
I'm going to hazard a guess because I know we had it before. Have you used the blackberry liqueur?
There it is. Creme de mure. Yeah, so there is both squished blackberries and blackberry liqueur.
That's the main thing I'm getting. Yeah. Other booze? Red vermouth?
There is some red vermouth.
Only because you asked me if like...
So you could have impressed me massively there.
I was about to, but then you went, ooh, and then I'd already started talking. And I was like, oh shit, he's forgotten that I know that.
Yeah, I would have gone, oh, nicely done.
I totally guessed that with my palate. Everything else, not sure. Is there anything else in it?
There is three other things.
Three? I don't know. I know it's not gin because I don't have any. Is there bourbon?
It's some rum.
Oh, is there rum?
It's a white rum.
White rum. Okay, that makes sense.
The base spirit.
Some white rum. Like it.
And there's a bit of pineapple.
A pineapple. Ooh, the pineapple always foxes us.
Yeah.
We never can tell.
Pineapple rum. But yeah, because that works. Yeah. Chuck a couple of blackberries in there. Yeah.
Deliciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. And then some peychos, some bitters.
Ooh, peychos bitters.
Some Creole bitters.
Wow.
In there at the end as well.
Ooh.
But yeah, I think it makes a perfectly delightful drink.
It does. And I took too many sips to start with because I was so blown away by that flavour. And now I'm tasting all the alcohol.
Oh, there we go.
That may have been an error because there's rum and creme de mure and red vermouth in there. And I'm happy.
Good.
I don't think it would be for everyone, to be honest.
If you don't like blackberries, don't drink it.
Then what are blackberries really as a flavour?
Well, I'll go that.
That.
Blackberries.
I mean, I didn't want that to sound like too much of a philosophical
question.
That
was quite a philosophical question.
But really, what is?
What is a blackberry?
A blackberry. I don't want to go down this route anymore.
Let's really not.
I think we should stop very quickly.
It's perfectly pleasant. It's not blow your socks off, but I'll more than happily sit here and drink it.
Quick question
before
we crack on with Storyville. So blackberries in season right now in England and Europe. This is the time. Can you make your own blackberry liqueur rather than buy the creme de mure?
Making a blackberry liqueur will be slightly more quite difficult at home, I would imagine. Because it is an alcoholic. It is a spirit. So you can make a blackberry gin. Like you would like a slow gin, just like infusing a load of blackberries.
But that would take weeks.
But that absolutely, that would take months and months and months to do.
No, not months and months and months. A few weeks.
So
you could probably make it with vodka.
Yeah, but I don't think it's still going to be a flavoured vodka rather than a...
Just something from that fermented.
I would say probably not, because I think you're going to need a still and all that sort of stuff to...
Any of our listeners who have a still,
then bring it on.
Raise your hand.
Absolutely, yeah, then crack on. But no.
Probably not. So it is, you need to get the creme de mure. If you're a blackberry fan, worth it because it's quite lovely.
It's not crazy, crazy expensive.
And you can have it with champagne or sparkling wine.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. With a drop of gin or something like that. Make a lovely gin tonic and put some of that in there. Yeah, with some sparkly wine. Delicious. So there are plenty of uses for it. And say, I think a bottle of like a 70 centilitre bottle costs about £15.
Oh, that's all right, isn't it?
So it's not expensive stuff.
If you want to add to your seasonal flavours.
It will last a long time because you don't use it and everything. It's like I buy the violet.
Yes.
There's one drink I use that has violet liqueur in it. So you spend 15, 20 quid in a bottle, but it will last you 2 years.
Unless you're like me and you use your Chambord or the creme de mure and whenever you have some fizz and you go, I'm going to put this in here for all my friends. Oh my God, it's good. But also a good time of year to make your blackberry gin or blackberry wine if you want to. If you want to self-infuse, just do that.
Absolutely.
Self-infused sounds like a weird
way.
It
really does. Self-infused.
Like, I'm going to infuse this in me.
I'm going to go have a gin bath or something.
Just with a ladle. Invite your friends round.
Yeah,
hand out the cups. You're in there. I chose my own genitals. Don't you worry.
You chose your own as opposed to someone else's.
Baldur's Gate. Have you got blackberries? Have you got some other berries?
Yeah, it's getting weird again.
I think the blackberries work for the giggles. Great. Well, I'm happy.
Okay, good.
What was that? What was that? With the special day.
Especially.
Would you hate? Firmly in hand. Picking fruit as we go. Is it time for a story, Nick?
I think it probably is.
I think we should have a story.
Hurrah.
Hooray.
So this week's story is set in the little quaint little Suffolk village of Cratfield.
Okay.
Familiar with Cratfield?
No.
No, not many people are.
Of course I'm not.
So it is a tiny wee place.
It's this big.
And the population today as opposed to the population in the end of the 18th century where our story is set, hasn't really changed much.
Oh, really?
200 people. 200. Also, it's so very, very small little place that has not changed in many hundreds of years. So there are actually very few sources for this case. So I have to have a big thank you to a pretty much a single book, which is Murder and Crime in Suffolk by Sheila Hardy. The whole thing comes from there.
Well done, Sheila.
So well, well done, Sheila. Thank you very much. You and your excellent Suffolky murdery book.
Buy her book.
So it is the evening of the 16th of October, 1793. And Thomas Carter and his daughter Elizabeth are walking home after shutting up the small little village shop that they run. They get home around 6 p.m. and settle in for the evening. Now, there is no mention of Mrs. Carter in this story, so presumably she has predeceased. she's already out of the picture by this point.
Just say she died, Nick. Predeceased.
What's wrong with that?
Just she died.
I chose a different word.
Predeceased.
Yes.
You would have yelled at me if I'd said that.
Probably. I failed to see your point.
Can someone bleed to death in this, and can you say exsanguinated?
I shall. And someone jumps out the window and they are defenestrated.
I love this already.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually went through, this is the story according to my thesaurus.
Thesaurus.
Fuck off. Right, so she's dead, all right? Mrs. Carter's dead. She's fucking kicked the bucket. She's fucking dead, all right? Don't know why, don't know when, but she's fucking dead. And she's left Thomas and her daughter.
Bereft.
Bereft, heartbroken, anguished, bewidowed. Especially bewidowed.
Especially bewidowed. What an especial day. I fear this is not the point of the story.
No, it really wasn't. You've made it the point of the story.
Did she come back to haunt everyone? Then let's just carry on.
So later on that evening, presumably the Carters, they've gone to bed, they've shut up the house, they've gone to bed. Later on that evening, Sarah Dunnett, she's a neighbour and she decides to pay a visit to the Carters. Mm-hmm. She is worried that her clock has stopped working or is running very slow. So she's got a clock at home. It's like, that's not the time. That can't be the time, says Sarah. So she's going to go and check. She's going to go to her neighbours.
Oh, because it's 1793.
She can't like phone the speaking clock or look at her mobile and go, oh, that's the time.
Wait for the town crier to come by who would tell you the time.
Nah, that clock's wrong. That's wrong. she's going to take the trip to her neighbours to set her clock. So
please let her clock have just been a picture of a clock that she's been using for years.
But it's right twice. I'm sure it is. So it is a bright moonlit night at about 8 o'clock when she heads out of the house. As she walks down the lane, she notices that the lights are entirely out in the Carter's house. The windows are all shuttered and everything seems quiet. So she assumes, okay, they've had an early night. It's been a mad day in the shop and they've got an early start. They've gone to bed early. So she turns around. I'll try again in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll come back with my clock then.
How's she going to know when it's the morning?
No more blackberries for you.
She's going to go, I'm pretty sure it's 8 o'clock. It's 2 in the afternoon.
But it's bright sunlight. The cockerel's going, no, the clock says it's midnight. I'm going back to bed.
She turns up that she's just got a cockerel under her arm going, this clock is wrong. It's very loud.
A bit later that same evening, now around 9 o'clock, John Harmon and his wife are returning home from a day out in Norwich.
Ooh, lovely.
They've had a lovely day out. They're returning home on their cart and they cross Chevenall Green, which is near to the road where the Carters live. And as they pass through Chevenall Green, they hear what they think is a woman's scream.
Ooh.
They hear a scream. John remarks this to his wife that he's sure it's a female scream. Miss Harmon replies that no, it's going to be some domestic thing. It's going to be some domestic incident.
Jesus.
The least we have to do for it, the better. Forget about it. Drive on, let's just get home.
Ooh.
We don't want anything to do with that. Off they go. However, as they continue their drive down the track, John is convinced that he sees a man running down the lane by the Carter's house, just hiding in the shadows along the hedge. The next morning, neighbour, Sarah, she gets it right, I'm going to sort this clock out once and for all. So she's up quite early. She's eager to visit the Carters before they go and open the village shop. She knows they have an early start. So right, I'm going to get up and go out early. She walks down the lane past the blackberry bushes that enclose the Carters' garden.
Oh, yay.
So some nice little blackberry bushes there.
Brambles. A garden shit.
I'm sure the inside is lovely and they have a glut of blackberries. And they make lovely jam to sell in the shop.
Okay, you painted a beautiful picture there.
Beautiful picture. Okay. As she's walking close to the house, but she also notices some torn fabric that has been caught up in the brambles on the bush. She goes into the garden to try and just get this litter that she thinks is just rubbish. And then she sees a small bare arm sticking out from under the blackberry bush. Getting closer and closer to investigate, Sarah finds Elizabeth, the daughter's dead body.
Oh, poor thing.
Beneath the blackberry bush. Her head has been caved in with something massive and heavy, and there is very little left of her skull.
Oh, good Lord.
Sarah is screaming quite a lot, as one would. And this attracts the attention of John Wright, who's another villager. He is on his way to work. Mm. He hears Sarah's commotion and he goes to investigate, finds a poor young Elizabeth like that. And Sarah and John enter the Carter's house to try and find out what's happened to Thomas. And they find him sitting in his armchair, back of his skull smashed in.
Oh, good Lord.
It's not a pretty sight in the Carter's house.
She never asked for the time again, I
probably
fear.
Not. No, absolutely. Every hour is midnight.
Every hour is black.
It's all black.
Jesus.
That afternoon, the coroner holds the inquest. Sarah Dunnett, John Harmon, John Wright, they all report what they had seen the evening before. And several other witnesses come forward saying that we saw a stranger lurking in the village. We saw this unknown chap who was just there throughout the day, but he didn't talk to anyone, he didn't go to the pub, he didn't go to the shop, he was just there. And now he's gone.
Well, it would be quite weird to see someone just lurking around in the
absolutely.
Street.
Absolutely. And someone who's not there on business, he's not there on trading anything or going
well,
to
just
the
no one knows.
No one knows why he's there.
A guy in the street is like, we don't know him, and why is
why
he here?
Are you here? Absolutely. So together, these witnesses build up a picture of this man. Now, he's wearing a light-coloured long overcoat. Okay. He's got a black or a dark waistcoat and breeches on. His hair is brown and plaited and tied up with a black ribbon. And he's topped with a large, round, flat hat.
It's quite an image, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is that normal?
Well, I think, the long plaited hair and thing.
Be,
absolutely,
the late 1700s. Yeah. So, yeah.
Indeed.
But
so.
The big, round, flat hat.
Big, round... Big brown floppy hat.
It seems like a sun hat he was wearing. Or,
it's
or
got a big
bonnet.
Sunflower on the top. It's actually a sombrero. Another witness who is at the inquest swears that he has seen a person answering this description, running very, very fast in the road leading from the Carter's house at around 9:30, 10 o'clock the previous evening. So I think, all right, this is our man, whoever this mystery chap is. At the end of the day, the inquest records that Thomas and Elizabeth Carter had been murdered by person or persons unknown. The inquest is adjourned until Monday the 11th of November, so a couple of weeks later, in hope that new information will be found by then. There's going to be investigation, they're
fair
going
enough.
To find new information.
Yeah.
A plea is put out for witnesses, anyone who's seen anything, please go and they need to go and see the village constable, they need to go and see a church warden, anyone in authority. We need to try and identify who this murderer is. Nothing. That is
really?
Nothing. The local press don't even bother to report on the inquest when it comes back. That's even
really?
If it actually happened. We don't actually know if the inquest
got adjourned or properly.
Yeah, actually was resumed again. There are no press recordings or anything about it. So potentially we've got no new evidence. We've got absolutely nothing new.
A murder happened, someone was there, and we've no means of catching them.
We have no idea who it is.
Well, good luck.
So, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, understand, the locals are not at all happy about this. They're absolutely horrified about what has happened to one of their own, two of their own. Mm. This family, who were life and soul of the village, why has something so monstrous happened in their little corner of the world? Mm. There appears to be no obvious motive for this really vicious attack. There's nothing in the house has been disturbed. There's no evidence of robbery or anything like that. There is no sexual component to any of it. So it just seems like an entirely blitz frenzy, but very, very targeted attack for no reason. a couple of people come under suspicion. Oh, we haven't seen you around, but before. But then it's like, no, I live over there.
I live over there. Like, oh shit, we weren't looking over there
with 12 people, and they all saw me at home.
We have a very small house.
Yeah. So eventually, the case becomes buried under new, more pressing cases. Life carries on, and the murders get forgotten about. It's just sort of
really. Yeah.
He just pass into memory.
I mean, what
and that is the end of our story.
Well, I was going to say, like, you just said it's a very small village, town, village, area. Small,
oh, people are talking about it. Absolutely.
People are talking about it.
People are talking about
this,
it.
This would be the biggest thing that's happened.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, no, we don't know.
Yeah, well, the authorities come from the big city,
the big smoke
and things. So yeah, they're absolutely
the assizes.
Yeah, they've got nothing. They've
I suppose
got nothing
they get there
new.
And go, oh, okay, well, this is screwed.
Yeah, it may well be the talk of the village for months and months and months and months and months. But for as far as the authorities are concerned, there is no new evidence. There is nothing to go on. We have no idea who these people are. We've got shitloads of other stuff to do. But we can investigate, and we do know what's going on. We have people we've got to chase down. So it gets. Yeah, gets forgotten about.
Gets left.
Gets to the bottom of the pile. That is until the summer of 1801.
Okay.
So we're about eight years later.
Eight years later.
Now, and a chap named John Head finds himself in Norwich Jail, sharing a cell with another guy called John Saunders. Now, Saunders is awaiting execution for the theft of two cows.
Bastard.
Vicious, vicious, vicious crime. Mm. Stealing two cows is going to be executed.
Stealing two cows, that's difficult. Think about the logistics.
Going, here, cow.
Cows don't respond when you call them. But, like, yeah, you have to, like, quietly go down the street pulling two cows. They moo, and they're huge.
They do it at night, but cows moo all the time.
Yeah.
So, no one's going, oh, there's a cow mooing, someone must be stealing it.
Yeah, but also it's down like the street as well. Alarm. People will walk back and there's a fucking cow moving on the street.
But people move their cows around all the time.
Not
cows go from place to place and field to field and off to slaughter, off
road.
To market and such
not down
like
the
that.
Road. Yeah. You keep an eye on them. I think it's weird.
Okay.
Cows are big. You go steal a cow and you report back.
Right. From this we've established the cows are big. So John Head and John Saunders, they're sharing this cell.
Mm.
The two become friendly. And John Saunders reveals to his cellmate that in the past, he had been a suspect in the Carters' murder.
Ooh,
he had been a suspect.
Okay.
So how this comes about in conversation, what are you in here for, mate? Stealing cows, but once I was accused of murder.
Maybe trying to impress each other.
Maybe so. But it comes out in this conversation that he was once a suspect in these murders. I mean, he adamantly denied then and now that he had anything to do with the deaths, but he said he did know who was responsible. He knew who the culprit was.
Gosh.
Now, why he hadn't revealed this at the time, who knows? But seemingly with his impending execution, he wants to get this off his chest. He has to tell someone. He has to unburden this knowledge to someone else before he meets his maker.
Mm-hmm.
So Saunders tells John Head everything he knows. How the murders have been committed, who was responsible, the lot.
Wow.
Not long after, Saunders' sentence is carried out. And John Head is left wondering what to do with this new information that his cellmate has given him.
How convenient.
John asks the governor of the jail. He needs to speak to a magistrate. He's got vital information. To impart.
Right.
Now, presumably he wants to negotiate a reduced sentence. We don't know what he's in for. Obviously, it's not a capital offence, so he's in for. He's going to get out at some point.
Yeah.
But so he wants to negotiate, reduce sentence, better conditions, whatever it is.
Okay.
He's got this vital information. He's got the identity of a murderer. So, Magistrate Archdeacon Oldenshaw.
That's a very good magistrate's name.
Archdeacon Oldenshaw. He comes to the jail with a constable to take John's statement.
Mm-hmm.
John reveals everything that he has learned. The murderer's name is Edmund Thrower. Edmund Thrower. This is the chap who has killed the Carters. He also gives great detail about how the crimes were committed, the methods that were used to prove that this is just... I'm not just picking a name out of the hat. I actually have knowledge of the crime as well. The magistrate takes the statement and does fuck all.
What?
He goes, oh, that's nice.
But nothing?
Nothing. Now, whether he doesn't believe this story, whether he thinks it's complete nonsense, or if he just doesn't care, we don't know, but nothing was actioned upon.
Well, I suppose your instinct is to go, oh, this is someone trying to negotiate his way out of it, yeah. making up bollocks.
Making up nonsense, making to get up a reduced nonsense, sentence, like, whatever
no,
it is.
No, that's just rubbish.
It's all bollocks. So nothing happens with this revealed information at all. Yeah. But apparently the information had sort of wormed its way into his skull. But it lays dormant for another stretch of years. December 1811.
Jesus.
We are now 18 years after the murders. Magistrate Oldenshaw is in London. He's having
town.
A drink with an attorney friend of his, a Mr. Fox.
Mr.
Fox the attorney.
Of course it is. Why are all lawyers and attorneys called Fox or Wolf or Laurie? He was not so successful as Fox and Wolf. But, you know.
So they're discussing the latest terrible incidents in the papers. The Ratcliffe Highway murders.
Yay!
So take a listen to episode 57. To hear all about the Ratcliffe Highway murders.
It's a
but
very,
they are,
very good story.
This time they are all over the papers. This is cutting edge stuff then. But something of these latest murders, of the Ratcliffe Highway murders, jogs Oldenshaw's memory.
Well, yeah, because that was a brutal attack.
Absolutely. It was a brutal, vicious attack.
Unsolved.
Unsolved. There were naked people running down the street.
There were. So, connected with a crime, not just crime. Generally.
So he goes, oh, it reminds me. It reminds me of this Carter shenanigans nearly 20 years ago. And he tells this to his friend, Mr. Fox, that these latest goings on bear this resemblance to the murders in Cratfield. He also mentions that his visit to John Head, Norwich Jail, and how he had accused the man by the name of Edmund Thrower. So it's still all in there somewhere, and he's telling his mate. Now, Mr. Fox, he seizes on this name, Edmund Thrower. How very odd. It's a strange coincidence, but he has an inheritance for a woman by the name of Thrower.
What?
But he can't give it to her because they can't find her husband. And
what?
They need his permission. Apparently, to impart this inheritance. But yeah, this Mr. Thrower has vanished. We can't find him.
What?
It's just like a strange coincidence of names.
What? How has that come up? That he's talking to him and that just by coincidence...
Just by entire coincidence. Oh, I've got an inheritance from a Mrs. Thrower.
Jesus.
And we can't find her husband.
Where can we find her
husband? What's going on there? So this chat between Mr. Fox and the magistrate seems to have rekindled Oldenshaw's sort of interest in the case.
Yeah.
These sort of weird coincidences. And it probably was an entirely different Thrower that they were looking for.
Maybe.
I can't imagine they're the only people called Thrower in the country.
Yes, probably not.
So it's probably completely different, but it sparked something in him.
Yes.
That I need
now
to,
I'll look into
now
this.
Now I'll look into this.
Rather than at the time.
20 years later, I shall pay
now
attention.
Now I've got not a lot to do. This seems like a nice project. Really, a man died.
Yeah. So on his return to Norfolk, he issues orders for Edmund Thrower to be tracked down. And quite swiftly, he is found and he's working as a blacksmith in the village of Carbrook.
Blacksmith.
Now, Thrower is arrested and brought before the magistrates. This is the beginning of January in 1812.
Mm.
Now, Thrower had some run-ins with the law before, but he swears his innocence. He never had anything to do with the Carters' murder. Wasn't me. It was all John Head.
What?
He was the man who did it.
John Head?
John Head.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah, the chap who in the Norwich jail
presumably
got this information from John Saunders, he says.
So he got it from John Saunders and then he implicated someone else?
Yes.
Oh, that is...
But apparently John Head didn't get anything from John Saunders.
No, he was just trying
was
to...
Him.
Oh, it was him. Oh, he was spinning a yarn.
He was spinning a
that's
yarn.
That's how he knew so much. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So, whoever's lying there, brilliant.
So, Mr.
Head,
you're a clever little smart man there.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Because John Saunders can't say, I didn't say any of that, because he's been executed. So, Thrower says, no, it was all him. Mm. It was all John Head. He is the culprit, but he was aided by another criminal, a chap known as Gypsy William.
Okay. Right.
Twas his name.
Yes.
Twas his name. These two are also arrested. The three of them.
Right.
So we've got John Head, Edmund Thrower, and Gypsy William. They are all accused of the murders of Elizabeth and Thomas Carter 19 years earlier.
Da, da, da.
The trio had all been in trouble with the law before. Their lives were constantly in and out of prison. John Head had actually been transported for a period of about 3 years had returned. So real serious criminals they were. John had also realised that until now, yes, he had done small things, nothing to earn a death sentence.
Yeah.
However, being accused of murder, that's going to get you to the gallows.
Yeah.
That's going to get you to the gallows. And he does not want that, unsurprisingly.
Shocking.
So
yeah.
to save his own skin, he decides to turn King's evidence against his former friend, Edmund. Should we have a break?
Oh, I think we should have a drink.
Let's have a drink.
I think we should also have a drink because the birds and the foxes outside my house right now started screaming during that story.
It's an exciting story.
It's an exciting story. Let's have a drink.
Okay.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, okay, Nick, we have our drinks.
We have our drinks.
You have a drink. The foxes have their drinks.
The foxes have their drinks.
The birdies have their drinks.
John's going state evidence. He's turning on his criminal ways and bad man.
He gives
great detail
right.
about he and Thrower had known each other for over 30 years. They had embarked on a range of criminal skullduggery throughout that period, and they had been very close friends. Their families had been close friends. They'd helped each other out. When one was in prison, the other would look after their wives and children and stuff, and vice versa.
That's crime family.
Exactly, a good crime family, but now it's every man for himself. Now, he states that in March of 1792, so this is just prior to the murders, Edmund Thrower had been released from his latest stint in prison. He had served 7 years aboard a prison hulk just outside Portsmouth.
Okay.
So a big ship. Yeah, yeah. Not fun conditions.
No,
really
gross,
very,
gross.
Very, very unpleasant. And he's been there for 7 years. Not fun.
I am still picturing, every time I think about like the awful cramped conditions, I think of The Simpsons and Sideshow Bob going, "We were little more than animals. Who used my chapstick?" Me. I don't want it.
It was much like that.
It was much like that.
On his return home, after his seven-year stint, he had discovered that his wife had left him.
Oh.
And started a relationship with another man.
Well, she had needs.
Yeah, indeed. But he was determined to win his wife back.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "No, I love you. You're going to come back to me, absolutely." But to do this, he gets himself a steady job.
Good. He's going down straight and narrow.
Absolutely, yeah. He gets his job as a drover, taking animals to market.
Nice, great.
Absolutely, he does this for 18 months. So yeah, nice, consistent, not one element of criminality in any of it.
Very good.
But his efforts are in vain, really. His wife still refuses to return. And this frustration seems to turn to real anger when he hears a rumour that a couple living in Cratfield had befriended his wife and persuaded her she is so much better off with this new chap.
Oh.
You really don't want to go back to Edmund. He's no good. He's a criminal. You're better off without him.
That's good advice. Move on, love.
Yeah,
move on.
Absolutely. Edmund does not take this advice that his wife's been given well. So according to Head, Thrower says that he had done them a kindness in return. He's gone to their home. He finds the woman in the garden. She's closing up the shutters of the windows for the evening. He takes his hammer and swings at her head, cracking her skull, and then throws the body into the blackberry bush. Still in a rage, he then goes looking for the chap.
Yeah.
He finds him in the house, sitting in his armchair with his pipe. From behind, whack over the head, skull disintegrates. At trial, they asked John Head, well, why the hell didn't you come forward?
Yeah.
You knew this at the time. Why? And he replies, but with his history, with his criminal history, he didn't think that anyone would believe him. It would be Edmund's word against his. Both of them have a really checkered past, not a good reputation. Who was going to believe him? I'll just keep my mouth shut.
I mean, I guess honour amongst thieves.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Let's go with it.
And he says, well, eventually, after a number of years or so, he puts it to the back of his mind and he forgets all about it until his encounter with John Saunders in the cell, as they're discussing crimes and what they're in for and all this sort of stuff. And John and Head hatches this plan of I can get out if I can use this stuff that happened years ago.
Yeah.
And then he does his civic duty and reports what he knows to the magistrate, sort of via John Saunders.
No, okay.
But Thrower, on the other hand, paints himself as entirely the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
He has been caught up in the crimes of others. It was nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing in the slightest. In his account, he is on his way home after visiting his father-in-law. And he is overtaken by John Head and Gypsy Will. The pair of them, they offer him a donkey and £10 to go with them to Cratfield. Come to us to the village of Cratfield.
The donkey and £10.
Donkey and £10.
That's a tempting offer.
Absolutely. That's a lot of money. £10 is a lot of money. Donkey.
£10 is a lot of money. And a nice donkey.
Buy many donkeys
for
£10. So he goes, it's miles in the wrong direction, but £10. And he agrees to go.
Mm.
They reach Cratfield somewhere between 8 and 9. Edmund's still really none the wiser as to why he's there, apparently. Mm. He's just agreed to go for the money. Perhaps he thought, okay, I'm going to be some muscle or something. There's some caper going on.
Oh, okay. Apparently I have to go with him.
Okay, fine. They get to the Carter's home. Edmund is told to wait at the gate. Just wait there, look out. Let us know if anyone's coming. John and Will go into the garden. Edmund sees a young girl come out of the house and close up the shutters, ready for the evening, and watches as John smashes her skull in and chucks her into the blackberry bush. He then sees Will go into the house, presumably to kill Thomas Carter.
Yeah.
Afterwards, apparently, they're all now back on the road. Edmund's going, what the fuck has just happened?
we were going for a nice cycle.
Well, John here says they should go for a drink. That's all. Let's go around the pub. There's a lovely pub, the White Horse. The White Horse at Laxfield. Let's go down there, have a nice drink. Edmund doesn't really want to do this, apparently, but the others insist. No, come. You're not getting your £10 till you come for a pint.
Absolutely, yeah.
As they are walking through a field towards Laxfield, the trio bump into a man named Hogg.
Man named Hogg. The names get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, John Head and Gypsy Will seem to know this chap, and they are having a nice chat in the field. Edmund takes this opportunity to scarper, and he just legs it. So I've had enough of this. He makes his getaway and returns to his lodgings.
You would do.
And again, asks, well, why didn't you come forward? Yeah. Why didn't you say anything about this at the time?
He's probably terrified.
Yeah, well, exactly that. He gives the same response as John Head had. Who would have believed him? If I had told something, I would be next.
Yeah, these are two compelling stories here.
It's Edmund's word against John's. Both are career criminals.
Yeah.
Neither has an upstanding reputation to fall back on.
Yeah.
But it is pointed out that the original witnesses to the crime,
right,
they only ever remember seeing one person.
One man.
Never two or three. There's only ever one man in the village.
Well, but then...
So,
maybe...
The witnesses from Crapfield, the ones that are left from 20 years ago, they're all called back in the into court. Okay, do you recognise the man? Can you point him out who you saw? Say, 19 years has passed. And none of them can really identify anyone.
A guy you saw in the dark.
Exactly. You saw this man in the dark 20 years ago. Can you point him out? Not really, no. They're not sure who they've seen. The judge thinks that the evidence against John Head is rather questionable. Yes, he has been in trouble before, but he has in the past few years lived a very reasonable and respectable life. He swears that he's never been near Crapfield in his life at all. And what motive could he possibly have for killing Thomas and Elizabeth?
True.
What motives has John Head or Gypsy Will got for doing any of this? Nothing has been stolen. There is no money missing. There are no goods missing. Why would they have done it? Edmund Thrower, on the other hand, he knows the area well. And if the motive hadn't been robbery, then what other reason could there have been?
Revenge. Yeah.
Absolutely. Revenge against the Carters for persuading his wife to stay away from him.
Ooh.
Takes the jury 35 minutes to arrive at their verdict. Edmund Thrower is found guilty and sentenced to be hanged.
Oh.
All the way to the gallows. He admits to have lived a very bad life, a very sinful life, but he has had nothing to do with the Carter's murder.
Yeah.
He did not do any of it. Of course, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
His execution takes place in Ipswich on the 23rd of March, 1812.
Da, da, da.
But there's one final twist.
No.
Another twist.
Another twist.
Just after the execution of Edmund Thrower.
Yeah.
Magistrate Oldenshaw, dear old Oldenshaw.
Oh, there he is.
He is called to a house to receive a deathbed confession.
A confession?
Deathbed confession.
Love those.
From the widow of a son of Thomas Carter, the murder victim.
Right, okay.
So apparently he had a son,
so his son?
Who had left home by the time of the murders, lived
and
his own life.
His widow?
His widow could not leave this world without revealing her late husband's guilty secret, she says.
Sure.
It was he who had arranged for his father and his sister to be murdered.
Okay.
He had employed Edmund Thrower, John Head, and
all
Gypsy
three.
Will to do the dirty work for him. But why he had done such a thing remains a mystery.
Inheritance?
Who can say?
And that is the
and
story.
That is the story. Well, there is of it.
And well, there is of it.
Of Thomas and Elizabeth Carter.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's a good mystery.
Yeah, it was a mystery.
I have strong feelings about this.
Okay, I'm good.
Yeah. The last twist is interesting. The last twist of the widow jobbing in her husband. He's dead.
Husband's dead.
Apparently, so she's saying that he arranged it.
Yeah, absolutely. So
what
apparently,
would she gain from saying that on a deathbed?
Guilt. Apparently, her husband has imparted
this
secret.
That's what I mean,
That he did this dreadful, dreadful, terrible thing.
Yeah.
And she's the only one who knows about it. And he's dead now.
Yeah.
What does it matter? She's going to die any second. If she needs to get this off her chest and say, this is the truth. This is what actually
so
happened.
So maybe did the son then benefit from the
so,
father's
yes, so essentially,
death?
Yeah. So assuming the daughter...
Or had a grudge or something like that?
The wife... obviously wasn't around at that point. She had predeceased, as
she had predeceased, yeah. She had pre-died.
She had pre-died. She was pre-dead at the time. So with Thomas and his sister out of the way, did he then inherit everything? Did the son...
Yeah.
Well, we don't know the son's name. Did the son inherit everything?
Did he inherit or did he have beef at the same time?
Beef?
Did he feel resentful or something like that?
Absolutely.
Possibly. Because it's a strange thing for the wife to confess the husband's crime.
Yeah.
Because normally deathbed confessions, if they are false, it's about like, oh, I'd like some notoriety before I go. She could be seeking that. So that's a bit of a spanner in the works. That's interesting. But that's never come up before. Because you would think if the chaps had been hired by him...
They would have said.
They would have sold him down the road. And if he was dead or like, well, how afraid were they of him? So, well, let's put a pin in that.
It could be nonsense.
Oh, the two factions, though. So John Head, Edward Thrower.
John Head, Gypsy Will, one side.
I know anyone saw one guy. They could have seen any single combination of three
men. Absolutely,
if you see what I mean.
Yes.
I don't know. I think I believe Edward.
That Edward didn't do it.
Yeah.
That he was dragged along.
Yeah. Because it's such a weird story for him to tell. For him to go.
It is.
It's a very strange defense to go. I was then made to keep lookout while these people did this. It's a strange story. But then they're trying to pit it all on him.
They're trying to pit it all on him.
Why?
Because this is the thing.
John Head has been in jail with Saunders, is it?
Yes. So he was the chap. So Saunders just seemed to be a happy...
Coincidence.
Like it was just a really good method of getting this information
but
out.
As soon as he's hanged... He's not around to confirm any
exactly,
of this.
Exactly, yeah.
Then John Head starts confessing. Yeah. And he gives his confession. And then years later, he also gives his confession again. Like, oh, I know who did this. Mm. It just seems very convenient to me. It seems very convenient that he's trying to set this up.
I mean, it's very well planned and very well thought through if he's trying to, to use Saunders as that sort of... I was told this by someone else.
Yeah. So who knows? Because he may have been in there for death or something. Like, trying to negotiate. At the same time, it's like, well, why would you implicate someone? It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in theory, he could have kept his mouth shut. If John Head, he was in Norwich Jail.
Yeah.
Presumably, he wasn't in there for a capital case.
No,
it was not said that he was.
Yeah.
If he had just kept his mouth shut. And not said anything about the Carter's murder, then it would have been entirely forgotten about, as it had been for the past 8 years. It wouldn't have come back. If he hadn't told the magistrate about it, the magistrate wouldn't be any the wiser.
But that's what makes me think that he may be guilty in a very reverse psychology kind of way.
He had to have a really good reason to use that as a bargaining chip to either get out of something.
To put his name in the consciousness. That's why I think he was trying to use some version of reverse psychology of going, someone was threatening to expose him, or that he thought, I know, I'll implicate someone else and go, I know some stuff. It definitely wasn't me.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a stupid way of doing things, which we've seen with criminals before, where they go, they are compelled to go, you know what, that crime wasn't me, but I know someone who did it. It's like, you did it. Stop talking. Just sit down and don't say a thing. But then the guilt and the paranoia gets to you. So maybe that was the case.
Maybe.
Or Edward did it. But why? What was the motive for killing these two? Is it just the jealousy? Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it if it's John Head's story to believe, then it's the revenge for the whole wife thing. I mean, again, according
to
the things
extreme.
I've read, the wife was never brought as a witness or anything like that. Again, say everything I've read is based on one source.
Yeah.
So perhaps she was, and it just wasn't referenced in this source. Who knows? But
if she'd remarried, he'd spent 18 months trying to win her back and going straight and hoping that they get married. I suppose there are cases where people get so fixated that these people ruined it for me.
Yeah.
But ooh, it's a thinker, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good little mystery.
It is a good little mystery. I like that one. Mm. I like it.
I'm glad.
Well, what do you think, people? It is a thinker. Whose story do you believe through this? And what motivations do you think that any of the players in this tale might have had to accuse each other or to kill the victims? Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your musings. Is there anything we might have missed? Are you from the area? Do you know what maybe might have gone down? Were some pigs involved? But most importantly, while musing about what could have gone down in this mystery, you must mix up and a special day. Change the name.
Yeah.
But also the drink. What did you think in the end?
I quite liked it.
Perfectly pleasant.
Perfectly pleasant.
Not world beating,
but no, a nice summery fruity drink.
Autumnal, mate.
Very true, yeah.
Tis the season.
Tis the season for autumn.
If you are into your blackberries, this is a lovely one to mix up, and it'll get you there because it's quite strong, actually. You didn't realise this. Yes. Mix up an especial day, or send us through your alternative name suggestions for this one. but also tag us in any pictures of cocktails you are enjoying this weekend or your visits to cocktail bars with new recipes that you'd like to suggest. Make sure you're sending us more stories that we can be covering in the future. Feel free to keep messaging us about particular ones that you are desperate to hear, big ones, famous ones, small, tiny, tiny, tiny ones. We'll get round to them eventually. If you haven't already, please leave us a review on Apple iTunes. And if you are able to, please join us on Patreon, particularly while we're having a little autumnal break, because we'll be having some really interesting content going out there, and it's always a fun, welcoming place. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you very soon. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.